is together. If you call the roll, please.
Right. Then Seaton's here.
President Muscat. Excuse.
Good morning.
Here.
Here.
Chair Keller. Here. Thank you. I think I'm going to introduce myself as Representative West a couple of times. I'm Representative West. I'm not Representative Keller. And the reason I'm doing that is about 10 minutes ago, I talked to Representative Gaddis down here at the Baranoff, and I keep calling her Representative Lynn, you know. So. Be on your best behavior committee. We got a lot of superintendents in the room watching your performance today, so you know they assess. So be careful. You know. What we have up today first is HB 80, which is a Representative Gaddis's bill. So Lynn, if you'd come forward and. We'll take the normal approach. Please feel free to go through your entire presentation, and then we'll go back and ask the questions.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Lynn Gaddis. I represent District 7, which is the Greater Wasilla area, and I'm here to present HB 80. HB 80 is the repeal of college and career readiness assessment requirement. And quite frankly, we put this in House Bill 278 last year, and I should say with the passage of HB 278 in 2014, which was last year, all secondary students must take the ACT, SAT, or work keys exam to receive a high school diploma at the state's expense. The change in the state's fiscal situation provides an opportunity to take a second look at this funding without impacting the classroom. Students that wish to be eligible for the performance scholarship or college admissions can still do so, but must pay for that testing themselves as they did previous. HB 80 removes the mandate for student college and career readiness assessment and in turn allows state spending for education to be targeted towards the classroom where the greatest return on the investment can be realized. It also takes an unfunded mandate away from the local districts. And with that, Mr. Chair, that's essentially my presentation.
Thank you, Representative Gaddis. I want to say for the record that Representative Vasquez, the excused member, is here. So. Is there any questions from the committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gaddis, the question I have is that work keys, previous to 278, work keys was required to be taken by every 11th grader. And on, I think it was 278, we required it to be on the transcript, the score to be listed on the transcript. But the whole curriculum has been established because we have about 70% of our kids don't go to college. There were career development pathways, Key Train, and another one that starts in middle school and goes through. Removing the work keys assessment essentially takes off the end game or the graduation, not a requirement, well, it is a requirement, it takes off that end assessment, or the goal at the end was to get the highest score that you could so that you could be competitive in the workforce and employers would be able to compete. So I guess how does eliminating the goalposts at the end of a curriculum track help us in the classroom?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, if I understood your question, I think what you were asking is specifically in regards to work keys. Our curriculum is not necessarily aligned to the work keys test, number one. So we have different school districts with different curriculum, and they are essentially teaching to their curriculum and their outcomes based on that. And it's my understanding that the work keys was more of a labor, and the Department of Labor uses it in many other states, versus using it as a high school exit exam. And at this point, work keys is used as a high school exit exam with no necessary score that you have to have in order to exit high school. So even though it's an opportunity to see how you did, it doesn't, it's another unfunded mandate for school districts. And it isn't, I see the commissioner in the audience, but our research shows that it's not on the transcripts. And it's not something that businesses are using at this time. There may be a couple that we are unaware of.
Follow-up, Representative?
Follow-up. Well, I guess the problem was trying to be addressed and solved was that employers had no idea what a high school graduation certificate meant because there was no way they could compare or know what the abilities of the student were when they graduated from all of our various high school districts. So how do you estimate that eliminating the comparative vehicle for people to understand what the level of expertise is of the high school kids, does eliminating that comparator gain the employer in Alaska any ability to know if students are prepared or not?
And through the chair, Representative Seaton, if I understood your question, what I'm hearing you say is that how would an employer know how a student is doing without the work keys test? And they have the opportunity to go to the Department of Labor and do that should their employer need to know that. But quite frankly, our certainly unscientific survey, we don't have employers that are using it now.
Any other questions? Okay, a comment, but remember we'll have a committee discussion later, so but go ahead.
Okay, this is in regards to the House Education Committee last year because she's sitting here in front of us, our former chair, and so I just wanted to remind people what happened last year. First of all, these ACT, SATs, if you go to their website, they are Common Core aligned, which many of the people haven't had Common Core in Alaska, and of course, you know my opinion on that. It's an expensive experiment. Number two, about 10% of our kids roughly graduate with a four-year college degree, and I don't feel it's necessary for all of our children to take this test. On the House Education Committee last year, 5 out of 7 people on this committee, House Education, voted to not have ACT, SAT in the bill. So it was my amendment, I remember, and even my colleague voted that spoke before me to not have this ACT, SAT in there. It should be privately funded, and the parents or the students should be responsible for taking these tests, as it was in the past. This is about a $600,000 fiscal note. And even this weekend, I talked to a principal, and he said this is costing a lot more time out of the classroom, not only for preparation, but now the kids are taking these tests during school hours, and it's definitely a burden to the school, so I'm very strongly in support of this bill.
Representative Gaddis, if we pass this bill, what would the districts would they still have the option of giving work keys and SAT, ACT?
Mr. Chair, certainly the districts will have options to do many things. With our budgetary constraints, I would be surprised that school districts would do that. Two things. Not only does it cost money, the test from a labor standpoint is being given through the Department of Labor. And number two, I think that they'll use their time wisely in classroom instruction. This bill does not mandate that they're not allowed to, but I would see that them reverting back to how the SAT and ACTs have been done in the past.
Okay. Representative Culver?
Do you know when the work keys entered our testing environment in the classroom or in schools? Wasn't too long ago.
Through the chair, Representative Culver, I don't know when it started. I'm sitting on this education committee the last couple of years. Our resident expert, quite frankly, was Representative Seaton.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions at this time, we'll open public testimony. If you would, stay there, because James Harvey from the Director of Employment Security, Department of Labor, from the Department of Labor is online for questions, and I just, if the committee has questions for him. I don't have anybody signed up to testify, and I don't think there's anybody online to testify, so. Representative Seaton?
Thank you. And who is it that's online?
James Harvey from the Department of Labor.
Thank you. And Mr. Harvey, the work keys section of this bill and the tests and levels that are recorded, are those, to your knowledge, being utilized by in the workforce?
Through the chair, yes, in the workforce in several capacities. We do have a whole listing of employers that I'd be willing to provide to the committee that recognize the work keys certificate or the national parameter certificate that the assessment produces. The larger piece that we're using it for is with the entrance into employment for employers that do recognize the certificate, and also entrance into some of the apprenticeship programs throughout the state where this particular assessment identifies those work-ready skill sets that these applicants need to be successful in employment.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton?
Yeah. Could we ask that he forward that list of the employers that are using work keys across the state to us, to the committee?
Do you have that happen? That you don't have that with you, in front of you, James?
Through the chair, I can provide that to the committee here momentarily.
Yeah, if you would, because I want to give the committee opportunity to act on the bill today if we can, unless there's questions that we are very uncomfortable with passing it on without. So if you would get that, James, and we'll just let us know when you're ready. Representative Vasquez?
Can the members Department of Labor and take the tests if they wish to do that?
Through the chair, Representative Vasquez, yes, to the Department of Labor and the locations that we service in the state. The difference between the Department of Education, of course, and the job center system that we have throughout the state is that the Department of Education operates in many more rural environments through the schools that are present in those communities. With the Department of Labor, we only operate in those areas where we have a job center present. And those are in the more urban or suburban hub areas that we have job centers. And so providing that assessment out in, again, the more rural areas of the state becomes difficult, well, impossible for the Department of Labor to do.
Is this example the only exam that individuals can take over the Department of Labor?
This is the only assessment that we have for work readiness in terms of the broad base of employers and the uses that it's meant for through ACT. We do offer assessments in the job centers for a variety of items such as Transportation Security Administration and other government entities that we provide testing for.
Okay. Representative Reinbold has a question. Do you have a question for James Harvey? James, if you would, go ahead and see if you can find that information. And what we're going to do at this point, then, is we'll leave public testimony open. That way you can come back on and give us that information. Just a second. Representative Vasquez has another question for you.
Mr. Harvey, for the record, what is the course of taking that work keys exam over at the Department of Labor?
Through the chair, excuse me, the cause or the course?
Course. C-O-S-T.
The cost. The Department of Labor currently funds that assessment entirely. For our operating costs with work keys in FY14, we expended approximately $235,000.
Follow-up, Representative Vasquez.
And how many individuals took the exam?
We provided assessments to 4,837 individuals that year and issued 1,275 National Career Readiness Certificates.
For which year, for the record, Mr. Harvey?
Excuse me?
For which year?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was for fiscal year 14.
Okay. And you issued how many certificates?
1,275.
Okay. Oh, one more follow-up. Representative Vasquez.
Mr. Harvey, what's the importance of the certificates that are issued? For what purpose are they issued?
The students that take these assessments, it helps to create a qualified resident workforce here. It gives the career and technical education opportunities to students necessary for them to move forward in the workforce in Alaska.
Maybe I need to reword my question. How do employers, future employees, use these certificates, this 1,275 certificates that were issued in fiscal year 2014?
Sure. Employers can do it in a number of ways. The broad way that we do it is through recognition. And so an individual possessing a certificate would come in, and that certificate shows their assessment level in three key areas that have been found broad-based across the country to exhibit those skills that employers are most needing. And those areas are reading for information, applied mathematics, and locating information. And with those scores, those employers can become aware of how well the applicant assessed at those three different assessments and use that in their hiring pool for placement into employment.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry. James, I'm sorry, Jerry. Yeah, okay, I stay there one more time. I just jumped ahead of Representative Vasquez. She has another question. And I appreciate your questions. They're very, very helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Harvey, do we have any idea the distribution of individuals geographically that are taking this Workies exam?
Through the Chair, Representative Vasquez, I don't have that directly in front of me. I'm sure we can get that data, and it would be tied to the job centers that we have across the state. And so that would be the geographic breakout that we'd see from there. And I definitely can get that data to the committee today. Mm-hmm. As a follow-up, I do have the listing of employers. How would you like me to supply that to the committee?
James, how long is the list?
It is 5 pages.
Okay. Do you have an electronic format?
I do indeed.
If you would email it to I guess me, and then we'll distribute it to the committee. Representative Seam, did you have a question on that?
Not on that.
Okay. Representative Vasquez?
I'm going to ask the obvious question, but for the record, what is the cost of taking the Workies exam over at the Department of Labor?
At this point in time, to the participant, the cost is zero. The department is paying for this utilizing federal funds that are in place to connect and provide individuals assistance with applying for work.
Another one? That's all right. Representative Vasquez.
Mr. Harvey, what is the amount of federal funds, for instance, for fiscal year 2014?
Through the Chair, Representative Vasquez, for 2014 fiscal year, the Department utilized $235,560 approximately for the application of this particular assessment.
Was that all federal money, through the Chair?
Through the Chair, Representative Vasquez, yes, all federal dollars. For this purpose and for connecting the individuals taking the assessment to job and or specific training opportunities to overcome training as a barrier to direct employment.
Okay, did you have a question for James or for the sponsor, Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to make sure that we were going to get the Department of Education up. The question was asked about when this was, it was put in place by the state school board, so we would be overriding their procedures, but I don't know the date on that, so I wanted to make sure we got that question.
Okay, we'll do that. They're here. And before we go there, we have a caller, Barbara Haney from North Pole. And by the way, thank you, James, very much. You're a very helpful testimony.
Thank you, Chair.
Barbara Haney, if you stay right there. Yeah. Identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Hi, my name is Barbara Haney, and I'm upsetting myself. However, between 2007 and 2010, I worked on a federal grant to help get the test of adult basic education installed in all the tribal offices and in addition to the Department of Labor. I'm not saying the work keys is a bad test. I'm just saying that I know for a fact that the test of adult basic ed is distributed throughout the state and it's at least comparable to the work keys. I do not believe that there's any need for these college and career ready assessments to continue to be offered by the school districts in Alaska. It seems to me that the Department of Labor is able to do this testing once a child is 16. In general, that gives a student 2 more years to take corrective action if they're going to continue in the high school, in the education setting, as opposed to going off into maybe the GED or the work career track. So I really support the repeal of this. I think it's a terrible expense right now on the system, and it doesn't stop anybody from obtaining at least for the work keys test. They can still do that through the Department of Labor, and it takes a tremendous burden off school districts. I know a while back when I had recommended the ACT and SAT, I had envisioned in my mind that it would replace something else. Certainly, I did not expect it to replace the exit exam. I think we are at a point in our state where we have to start having some faith and trust in the teachers that they have given the test. The parents have helped provide what they could for their students, and from then on, you know, they graduate. We ought to start letting schools determine that graduation at this point. If an employer wants anything, they can refer the kid to the Department of Labor if they're unsure what the value of that diploma is. I don't see why the school district has to continue to pay for that. And so that's my testimony, and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill.
Thank you very much for taking time to call, Barbara.
Thank you.
Before we have the Department of Ed come up, Lori Kopenberg just called in from Mat-Su. Lori, identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony on HB 80.
Certainly. Thank you, Representative Keller. My name is Lori Kopenberg, and I am calling from the Mat-Su Valley. I have been following health education all session, and I just want to say I fully support Representative Gaddis's HB, I believe it's 80, to repeal this law. Parents can make the decision if they want their children to take the SAT and the ACT, and they should be able to make the payment for that. That shouldn't fall on the state. So I wholeheartedly support Representative Gaddis's bill, and I hope that our committee here will pass that through to go to the full House and then to the Senate to make it into statute. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Lori. Appreciate it. So, seeing no other testimony at this time, we'll go ahead and close public testimony and put a board. Well, no, we'll have the Department of Ed comes up first, but thank you, Representative Gaddis. Representative Gaddis.
It's okay.
Okay.
I'll ask the Department of Education. I'll ask
But I forgot Jonathan, too. If you would come back up. I apologize. Representative Kreis, Tompkins had a question, and then I believe Representative Reinbold did. I wanted to give you the opportunity. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question directed to the Department of Labor, actually, if they're still on the line.
James, do you have to be there yet?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm available.
Okay, we have a question for you. Representative Kreis, Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harvey, through the chair. Would the $235,000 in federal funds be available to be repurposed to other Department of Labor programs, or does it come with strings attached?
Through the Chair, Representative Kreis Tompkins, this funding is our federal Wagner-Pfizer Act funding that is utilized for the base operation of the majority of our job centers throughout the state. So to answer your question, the repurposing of these funds could be done if the Department of Labor chose to discontinue the work keys assessment itself.
Okay. Representative Reinbold?
I'm going to hold my question until Department of Education comes up.
Okay. So what we're going to do, I was, you know, a little bit puzzled by all the superintendents in the room why there was no volunteers, but they finally got up here. I got them here, so I believe. Anyway, let's see. We got, having a hard time reading it. Is it Peggy? Peggy Karma? And from the North Slope Borough School District. I've spent a little bit of time up in the North Slope Borough School District myself. So are you from Barrow? Or?
I am. Peggy Collins, Superintendent of Schools, North Slope Borough School District. I live in Barrow.
Okay.
And I am speaking in favor of this bill. It is a wonderful opportunity to take the test, but we... let me back up one step. Sorry. The North Slope Borough School District has no official position on this bill because the board has not been able to meet on it since it came up. But in terms of concept, it's taking the tests and providing it at the schools is a wonderful opportunity for all the reasons that were given in terms of rural schools not being near centers where they can take the tests and being having an opportunity to take college and career ready tests, at the same time having an additional test that is required for graduation is yet another a burden and perhaps a barrier for students to get a diploma. And so in conference with our district, I'm speaking in favor of this bill.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Seaman.
How long has the district been giving the work keys to all 11th graders in the work keys before House Bill 278 last year?
Through the chair, that would be a better question. For I think 7 years, but I would need to double check. So we've been providing the work keys test for the years that it's been required and supported by the state. And it seems like that was about 7 years ago.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Representative Seaton.
And you know why the state school board implemented the mandatory across all school districts that they give work keys in the 11th grade?
I was not on the state school board, but I was certainly in the state at the time. And so my expectation was to provide a measure and an entrance so that students would have that on their record and have a ticket that would help them get jobs.
Follow up, Reverend Seat.
So I'm trying to figure out how eliminating the one procedure that the state school board implemented to make sure that we were adequately training the 70% of kids that aren't going to go to college. Eliminating that provision from your school will be helpful in training and giving rural residents access to the workforce.
Through the chair, my understanding was that this bill eliminated the requirement to take one of these tests to graduate. So the requirement for the state school board to offer the test and require students to take it was not a requirement for a diploma. It was a requirement on the district. And I think that is a better approach to it than making it an individual accountability approach by the student. So we could still offer the test, and we'd appreciate state support to offer the work keys test. But in terms of making it a requirement for the diploma and have an individual accountability on the student, I think pulling back on that would remove a burden on the student.
One follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess what I'm hearing you say is that you're okay if the state school board still requires every district to give the work keys test to every 11th grader and not pay for it, to have that money come out of the school district's own budget instead of having one of the assessments taken.
Through the chair, no, if the state school board is going to require it, I would expect, with all the other unfunded mandates, that the state school board would support it. But again, the state, there's two. My understanding was that this bill was removing the requirement for the ACT, SAT, and work keys for the diploma.
That's right.
Okay. And so the work keys test has been given for many years prior to that requirement, and could continue to be given in the way it was prior to that requirement. And so I would support the removal of that requirement for an individual student to get a diploma. I never spoke against, nor has my district been against, the work keys requirement as it was prior to last year's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, and thank you, Peggy, for being willing to testify. In that context, I want to thank, again, the superintendents in the room. We appreciate and respect the job that you have. It's incredibly huge, and I know it's probably not the most comfortable thing to get up and testify in front of your peers, but we welcome that. Connie, are you here? If you would, identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, I'm Connie Newman, superintendent for the Pueblo School District. And I would like to go on record as support of the bill as well. And I think what I have found in our small remote village is that the information we collected from the work keys is not used as efficiently as it could be. And that this year, the staff and I, we had decided just to go with the SAT and not implement the ACT work keys option for the piece that's required for their assessment.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you very much. See no questions this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jody Wall. I think it's Jody. Is it Judy? Jody? Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Hey, between my eyes and your penmanship.
My name is Jack Walsh. I'm the superintendent for the Craig City School District. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I would like to go on record that as a district, we also support this bill and feel that it's an important what could help us. Often my comments are a mix of my own personal beliefs and my district's position. So as I say these next couple things, I'll choose to suggest that they represent more of my opinion than others. And I do appreciate not only that you listen to us, but that you also ask the questions you do. So I want to focus a little bit on some of the questions that Representative Seaton asked. I've been in the state for a while. This is my 28th year working in schools in Alaska, and that means that I've been here through a time where we didn't have a graduation exam. We created a graduation exam. We eliminated a graduation exam. And in those periods of time that we've done those different things, one of the concerns that I had as a former special ed teacher was these of our residents and all of our students. So I do appreciate that, you know, with the kind of mixed messages we send from time to time, occasionally we take steps backwards in some people's opinion or other things that aren't as smart. As about how long the test is, I'm going to be interested to hear later exactly when it started, but I believe it was about 7 years ago, and I do believe it was during a time where people were debating, is our graduation exam actually accomplishing what it was set out to do? Are people now better informed about how prepared our students are as they leave our schools? And, you know, again, as a person who's worked in special ed and areas around testing for a long time, one of the concerns that we have is great tools, and they're very important for the information that we want to provide people with. And yet, at times, if we don't use the right tests for the right purposes, and their intended purposes, we make some great errors in judgment, I think, and make some mistakes that we have to think through. So, and again, in a state where we don't require an ACT or an SAT to go to college, to suggest every kid graduating from high school had to take it was not in my mind, a good idea. I do appreciate that when, you know, you heard that there's five companies and businesses that look at the work keys. That actually surprised me, because the number of people using it was much smaller. And were they using it universally, or was it just another additional thing they'd like to look at as they looked at transcripts and applications and stuff for people? So I do appreciate the time to be here. I think that, you know, our opposition to these two, but also about maybe other unintended consequences of tools that really weren't intended for this kind of purpose. So,
thank you very much for your testimony. And I'll bet you, Jack, I won't forget your name. Carrie Boyd, did you sign up? Did you want to testify? I don't see from Yukon Koyukuk. Are you just here questions? Or? Okay, thank you. Dina? Parnell? It's very, very tough for Representative Culver and I not to start cheering here. We were really fortunate, we believe, with the superintendent we have. If you would give us your testimony. How's that for a lead-in? Now, what are you going to say?
Thank you,
right?
Representative. Hi, my name is Dina Parma. I'm the superintendent of the Matsuburo School District, and I want to speak in support of this bill. Actually, my words echo what Peggy discussed. It really is in regard to a need versus a want. And this was nice to have for students. I personally have a high school student and did not have to pay for an SAT this year because she's a junior. And so was that a gift? I think it was a gift from our state. But in generally speaking, our state is in a difficult time of revenue. And I think we as a public should have more realistic expectations, not only of our government, but also of other public entities. And so this is something that I support, and that we don't have it. Work keys, I have some experience with that. As it wasn't used, kids don't find value in it, and we struggled with having kids take the test seriously in schools. I don't know if my colleagues had the same problems, but we did in Matsu. Unless there was an outcome for which that student saw that that test was necessary, many times they didn't take it seriously. So I just appreciate this being brought forward. I do want to bring up an equity issue for those maybe that couldn't afford the test. In Matsu, we're going to do everything we can, whether it's with title funds or others, that if students don't have an availability to take an $82 test, that we will assist in ensuring that students have equity and are able to take either the SAT, ACT, or the work keys in Matsu. Thank you.
Any questions?
No, I just
want to
make a comment.
Representative
Reinbold? Thank you, Chair Keller. I'm really glad that you guys are supportive of this bill, because last year we stripped this out of in House Bill 278 here, and it got put back in later down the road. So I ended up being a no vote on the House floor because a lot of this stuff got put back in the bill. So I'm really excited that you guys are supportive of this. So thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you. Representative Vasquez?
Well, I'm glad to hear that there's a provision made for low-income students. What other ways can a low-income child take these exams if this bill passes the legislature?
As Representative Reinbold had mentioned, prior to this year, it's actually, many of us probably took the SAT and ACT as well, that it was a choice if you were going to college. Really, districts, we know our students, and we work with our students, and we have counselors in our schools to know what the need is. We do that for sports as well. Students who cannot afford sports fees, who may be receiving free and reduced lunch, we have avenues and waivers to take care of those fees privately so that there is equity for students.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Anybody else online? With that, we're going to close public testimony and bring it before the committee. Before we go there, just a couple comments. One, just for the record, this was not a setup. The sponsor had no idea that all the superintendents were, number one, going to be in town. Number Well, it was, I guess, divine providence, whatever, but I'm very glad that they're here. Department of Ed, if you'll come up, I guess we'll reopen public testimony. I almost neglected to answer the questions. I apologize. It's Monday morning after daylight savings time. I'm kind of slow. Les, if you would identify yourself for the record, and would you like Representative Seaton to restate the question, or did you catch it?
Through the chair, or chair, first off, Les Morris, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Education, Early Development. I believe I remember the question, and then I'd like to clarify a few other points, sure, if I could. First off, we completely understand this legislation in terms of the fiscal climate, but I do want to point out some policy things that we advocated for the legislation last year. And advocated for this, knowing it changed along the way. I understand that it was removed from the legislation in this committee and it was later added, but I want to just bring up some of the policy reasons that we think it's important to consider even in the budget climate, and knowing that you may make a decision based on it. First off, I want to clarify in some of the testimony I heard that districts, as long as the state board supported this, could continue to test, but this bill does remove the dollars, and so it would really depend on the dollars left in the budget at the end of the session whether that could be done, because the state board doesn't have funding. They come to you to seek funding for initiatives, and that brings me to the answer to Representative Sim's question, which was when the work keys started. We started it as a statewide requirement in fiscal year 09, and that was the year that the legislature put funding forward so that we could offer it as a statewide requirement. It was used in smaller numbers in prior years, but again, the statewide requirement was fiscal year 09. A couple other important points that I want to make about the assessment. I heard someone speak to the issue around equity, and I want to speak particularly around an access issue that relates to that. Last year, 49 high schools were considered national test sites. To give the SAT, you have to be approved as a national test site, which requires certain criteria. However, when a state as a whole, through a state contract, is giving the SAT to students across the state, it opens the doors for more high schools to test. So this year, again, last year it was 49 high schools. This year, with in-school testing, we're testing at 93 high schools. So obviously that opened the door for a lot of students in areas that otherwise wouldn't be able to take the assessment. The ACT, which is used more often in Alaska by students in districts, last year we had 40 high schools serve as national test sites. Again, ones that would give that on Saturday. The in-school testing program has increased that to 255 schools. So that was 205 more schools could participate because of the in-school testing. That would go away because that's only available when you do the statewide contract and in-school testing. And then just a last point on that, 89 high schools actually offer both. So a district gets a choice. Do they offer the SAT, the ACT, or both? And the way that it works in these 89 is they offer a choice between either one of those or the work keys, because kids get to choose either SAT, ACT, or work keys. So those are just some important points we think are need to be put forward about access of the assessment.
Any questions from the department? Representative Colbert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fiscal note indicates that each test costs $52.50, and we've estimated that 10,000 students take the test, so the state would be saving $525,000. So we'd like to see negative fiscal notes, so this bill probably has some good chance of making it through. And the previous speaker, Superintendent Paramo, said that it costs $82 if an individual were to take the test. Is it possible to, once we repeal this, for the testing companies to provide the same price working through the department on this bundled cost, because you have contracted with them apparently for a lower rate than what an individual would have to pay. So without a mandate, but simply trying to offer a discount to eligible districts and students due to take this. Am I correct on those numbers, 82, 52, 50?
Through the chair, Representative Culver, my understanding is that the cost of the SAT is 52, 50, regardless of a state contract or not.
Okay.
I certainly, if that's not the case, we would probably advocate for the vendor for those costs for people who choose to do that. But it was my understanding that was the cost, whether it was bundled or whether it was individual.
Thank you.
Representative Leinbold?
Thank you, Chair Keller. First of all, I just want to get it on the record that as Vice Chair last year, it was my amendment in House Bill 278 to remove the ACT-SAT out of House Bill 278, primarily because of the Common Core alignment and because of the costs. But I want to ask you two questions right now. The deed a couple weeks ago, you said it, when the Alaska Performance Scholarship was done, you all, even though it was privately being paid for, the ACT-SAT, that you were getting scores on all the students for taking ACT-SAT. And if that is incorrect, one, please clarify that. And second, I want to know if this bill will, now that it's going to be privately paid, if the state will continue to get those test scores on these on all the students.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I do recall testifying, and we have been receiving those scores for APS verification. So we have received that. There wouldn't be a need without the APS, but since the APS would continue, the Alaska Performance Scholarship, we would still get those scores to verify that students qualified for the scholarship.
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold?
Okay, so first of all, that concerns me. I think that the students can bring you the scores. I don't believe that the state needs all those, and I think it needs to be their permission to give the state those scores. So that I do have an issue with, so I will be working with the sponsor on the bill, one, in regards to that issue. And number two, I would like to ask you if there's any impact to the No Child Left Behind waiver. Commissioner Hanley said that there's no money tied to the No Child Left Behind waiver. I got an email from him last week. And so I wanted to ask you if repealing these ACT-SAT work keys in any way is going to impact the No Child Left Behind waiver, or is it going to have no impact?
This legislation, through the chair, Representative Reinbold, this legislation would have no impact on ESEA in any way. At this point, we do use participations, the number of students who participate in this assessment in our ASPE model, the Alaska School Performance Index. But if this were removed, then we would have to go in and make a change to that. We use it as a college career readiness indicator, indicating that the more students who take this are thinking about colleges and careers. However, there isn't certainly any dollars attached to it. It's part of the school rating system, and the state board would have to go back in and look at that rating system and the removal of that particular indicator for college career readiness.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you. If this bill passes, does that negate the state school board's requirement that 11th graders take work keys?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I don't believe that would negate the state board from making that decision. It would then come probably down to a funding decision, and it would depend on the look of our agency budget at the end of the legislative session. And then I would add that this bill does remove the funding associated. So if this bill stood as it is and passed with the fiscal note as it is, we would have to evaluate budget. And I don't know that the money would be in there to support the testing.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, Representative Vasquez.
Okay. I just want to clarify something for the record. Are you stating that the state board could proceed, not if this legislation passed the legislature, notwithstanding the bill, that the State Board could go ahead and proceed to require the same requirement, or?
Through the chair, Representative Vasquez, no, not the same requirement. The requirement that the bill is repealing is a requirement to that you must take this to graduate. The State Board would not be able to do that. Prior to that legislation last year, the State Board required of all 11th graders to take the work keys, and there was funding associated with that. But it wasn't a requirement for graduation. And my understanding of Representative Seaton's question was, could they reinitiate that requirement, which has been removed, but could they reinitiate that? And the answer is they could. It couldn't be a high stakes in terms of requiring students to participate to graduate. And then the other question would be a funding question.
Thank you. I'm doing one more. We got to get our cues down here, Representative. I'm sorry. I don't mean to walk on you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. On the state level, what provisions are made, if any, for students of poor economic means to take these tests should they choose voluntarily to take them?
Through the chair, Representative Vasquez, there is nothing on a statewide level. There are some provisions that we help administer and that the vendors have for certain students to be able to have a fee waiver. I don't know those numbers of how many can get a fee waiver, and it's primarily done through the vendor offering fee waivers. There, I do know that with one of the vendors, there are some requirements of prior participation of students with fee waivers. The other important thing to do, though, and understanding that, is it this bill also takes away the statewide in-school testing, and so there are 205 schools that now offer the ACT, that those communities, those schools, won't be offering that. So it wouldn't even matter if the student had that fee waiver in those 205 schools, they won't have access.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to, again, nobody's called in that I know of, and there's no additional testimony, so we'll close again public testimony. That puts the bill in front of the committee, and just for your comments, you know, debate, questions, whatever. Like I say, I'd like to give the opportunity for the committee action today, if possible. But what are the comments, Representative Culver?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity. I support House Bill 80 because we need to start. I think it's the kind of the emphasis of a number of us here that come from local school districts that we've got to quit piling on more mandates, and it's time for us to assess these mandates as far as cost and effectiveness. And you know, from where I sit, I think we need to go back and see how we can put more resources and time in the classroom with all the professional development required for all the numerous mandates. To get results, we need classroom time. And so I support this wholeheartedly, and also because it saves money, it may create an opportunity for something that's more needed. You know, I heard concerns about cuts to education all weekend when I was out in the communities, and it's really tough. But I think this is a good bill, and I will be signing due pass.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is the Education Committee, not the Finance Committee, so I want to preface it. I'm approaching it from that way. But over time, I've been here 13 years on Education Committee, and one of the biggest problems we had in the state was that 70% of our kids don't go to college, and their needs of an education was not being addressed. And in fact, we heard that from one of the testifier from one of the districts right now, that they are not offering the work keys. They're going to ACT, SAT, which are college readiness, not career readiness exams. And so I don't at all oppose, in fact, I voted against incorporating ACT, SAT last year with Representative Reinbold, because I thought that what this is going to do is take us down the direction of, again, removing our focus from the majority of our kids and addressing high school education to the college kids, the 30% of kids that are going there, and I think we're already seeing that happening. So my objection to this bill is it removes the work keys portion, which is, you know, when we have a problem and we figured out a way to address it, the state school board brought the question to us, we funded it because we saw no other way of getting to addressing the 70% of our students who are not going on to college. And that was not what our total education system was supposed to be. So that's what the incorporation of that work keys was for. You know, I'm not opposed to the bill on the basis of not having a graduation requirement. I think that those are not appropriate. I thought that we had a really good system prior where we had a target and made sure that everybody was being prepared for the jobs and across the state, including college, but that we had a target that we would educate everybody. And I think that passage of this bill, removing the money from work keys, SAT and ACT, all of a sudden, I think we're targeting, saying we're not going to pay for the college readiness exam, and we're pulling up the 70% of kids into that mix, and work keys is not going to be instituted, and all of a sudden we lose our initiative to have our students job ready and have an active, employable Alaskan workforce when they come out of high school. So it is not the absolute idea of this bill, it is the consequence of this bill that I think is going to lead us back to high school just concentrating on college kids, and the rest of them are going to drop off. We're not going to have a work keys track. We've already been told that unless we fund the money, and that's part of this idea, is we're going to get rid of the funding for assessment, leaves us in a position of going backwards in education. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not against the getting rid of the idea of SAT, ACT funding as college. I think that we had a much better target on the majority of our students previously, but that will be a unintended consequence if we pass this bill. So I'm going to be a do not pass.
Reverend Seaton, if I want to respond a little bit on the purpose of this committee. It is not the Finance Committee, but we have been specifically asked by the Finance Committee to, in the Policy Committee, to take the finances into account. And the reason is that ultimately, the ultimate policy problem we can have is that if we have too expensive of taste, we cause the non-sustainability of the system, is which I believe in the situation we're in right now. So it is completely appropriate to take that into consideration in this committee. But I understand your comments, and frankly, a vote for this for myself is not a vote against work keys. I'm not imposing that on you, but I think work keys can be a very useful test. In fact, I was home this weekend, and I went over my one of my grandson's test files, and I was actually pretty stunned. The amount of tests that he had in his files was went back a ways, so it included the Terra Nova and the SBA and the EMP and the on and on. And it was just interesting, you know, watching him choose between the work keys and the ACT and. Or both, or SAT, you know. I mean, it was just it's creating the dynamic out there, and it will have an effect to vote yes, and I certainly will be a yes vote because I think that we've gone too far. But I appreciate your comments. Any other comments, Representative Christ Tompkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I acknowledge the comments that Representative Seaton made, although I support the spirit and intent of the bill. And moreover, I hope there's more legislation of this ilk and spirit that comes before the committee through the duration of this legislature, and echoing what you said, Mr. Chair. We have fiscal notes for legislation that comes through the legislature, but it relates only to the state of Alaska. And I think it's important that downstream effects are taken into account when we make policy. And so there are a number of other regulations, looking at the 70-30 rule and the waivers that come with that rule and mandated trainings that the legislature has instituted over the years, streamlining school maintenance requirements. There's a long laundry list that has been compiled by at least a couple of people in this room, as well as the School Board Association, and I hope there's more legislation that speaks to some of those points in the future.
I anticipate those. Representative Rambl, go ahead and move the bill.
As Vice Chair of Education, I move House Bill 80 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
I'll object first. Yeah. Object. Comment on your objection? Or you just call the word rolls, okay? Or you, because you made your statement.
Yeah.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Representative Bolger.
Yes.
Representative Feingold.
Yes.
Representative Dunn.
No.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Price Tompkins.
Yes.
Chair Keller.
Yes. So, go ahead, that's right. Bill passes, and we'll take a brief and ease here, sign the paperwork. Did he step out?
There you
go. Okay. If you would, identify yourselves for the record and give us your testimony.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, committee. My name is Jerry Covey. I'm a private education consultant.
Dr. Barbara Adams, also a private consultant to SEAC on this project.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we have a report to share with you. We've been hired by Citizens for the Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children to conduct a study that addresses the issue of educator quality and quantity for the state of Alaska. We'd like to share with you the general ideas in this report, touch on some of the highlights with you, and answer any questions you may have. The state of Alaska, as you are well aware, has had a long-standing challenge with meeting the demands internally, meeting the demands for the number of educators that we annually hire in the state. And there's also been a long-standing challenge of ensuring that the quality of educators we produce out of our preparation system is adequate to meet the needs, because we have very diverse needs within the state of Alaska. It has been with us for many years, and it's something that the university is working on. The State Board of Education has a role in teacher certification, obviously, so they've been working on it as well. And it seems that all organizations have been kind of edging up to the point of taking some action. And as we were contracting this last May, we began our research. We found that simultaneously the Board of Regents was moving on this, as was the State Board of Education having these conversations. So we did our research that we will share with you today, and we worked simultaneously and cooperatively with both the Board of Regents and the Department of Education on this. So some of the recommendations that you will be hearing from the university level will be complementary to the work we've done. In fact, some of them are identical. They have employed a couple of our recommendations in their work. Since we began this in May, as we all know, Alaska had somewhat of a different financial outlook in May than it does today. And at that time, we thought perhaps some of the recommendations that did have a fiscal note to them would be more readily accepted than they might be today. However, that does not negate the need for change, and it doesn't, even though we may not be able to afford some of these things in the short run, they are important items and to be considered as we look at this report and as we move forward. We'll move forward here, but the goals of the study are really twofold, and we'll kind of walk through the report with you and try to keep track of the pages we're on so you can track with us. Our goal is to expand the Alaska growing workforce to 60% by 2025. We employ about 1,000 teachers a year in Alaska, new educators, teachers, principals, etc. And 60% of those every year come from somewhere else, from a different state to us. And the other major goal of this is to focus on developing the workforce we have so that we can keep them in the field longer and increase their expertise level. And we, given that the state now has tools to measure the proficiency of our certificated workforce, we would like to reach a goal of 90% proficiency by 2025 as well. So we're looking at a 10-year plan here, and with that we'll dive into a little bit more detail with you. If you turn to page 5 in the report, Barbara will share a bit of information with you there.
So this is just a little bit of the statistics that situates where we're at, and most of you already shared some of this information this morning, so you're well aware of this. About 40% of our high school graduates actually attend post-secondary institutions. Over half of our first-time UA freshmen require remedial classes, which aren't credit-bearing towards their degree, and so extend their years in post-secondary. 81% of that group require mathematics remediation. And as Jerry said, about 36% most recently of our educator workforce new hires are from in-states.
Yes, and you know, historically, I can say with accuracy, there's been a fair amount of finger pointing back and forth between different state organizations, the university, the school districts, about you're not sending us students who are prepared, so they get here and they're immediate. They have to take remedial courses or developmental courses. And then on the flip side, school districts are saying that the educators you're putting out are not what we would desire them to be in terms of preparation and understanding. And I'm happy to say that at this juncture and at this point in time, we're beyond the finger pointing. Our work has clearly indicated a willingness on all parties to really work together to address these issues. So that's the point of reference that I think we would like to operate from as we share this information with you. We look at the fact we've given you, if you look at page 6, over the last 5 years, 64% of our teachers are coming out from outside. We also know that the teachers we train, the educators that we train in Alaska, outlast educators from elsewhere on a 2-to-1 ratio. So it's a great economic incentive for us to develop our own people because they come and they stay and they contribute. And the university is currently in the process of addressing their certification standards, and you'll hear more about that from the university as we move forward. But under the current standards, we're bumping up against a wall whereby applicants to our schools of education may not be qualified. So it's very important that we work together to address this issue, and that is in fact taking place. As I mentioned, you'll hear more about that on Wednesday from the university folks. The meat and potatoes of our report is really on page 14, and so we'd like to just turn your attention there if we could. What we have developed is a model that we believe goes a long way to address the needs. And if you look at the box, starting on the top, a systematic approach, a systemic approach is what we're proposing. And that is what has been lacking in the past, as I've already mentioned. But it's present currently. We are working in concert with other organizations, the university, the department, and the school districts to see this change take place. And of course, measurable outcomes. Measurable outcomes are kind of the foundation that we have to build this on. And cultural relevance. As we know, we have a tremendous diversity in Alaska. We have 50% of our students are minority students, and about 90% or 95% of our education workforce are basically white Caucasian educators. And given the fact also that we bring 60% of them from out of state or more, complicates the issue because they have little or no understanding of our state and our education system when they arrive. So it's a big lift for them. The purpose, of course, strengthen the K-12 certificated workforce. And so the best way to do that is to expand Alaska grown, and Barbara can speak to you about what we mean by Alaska grown.
So this model came out of a research design where we interviewed leaders in education in our state across all different agencies and organizations, and together analyzing that data, their thoughts together provided this model. And so the idea of Alaska grown was really a wide definition. So Alaska grown could be our students who are born and raised here and want to stay here and work. It could also just be students who maybe come from outside, decide to do their teacher preparation here, and so their Alaska experience happens to be their internships and their work with the students before they become certificated educators. Alaska grown could be our own students who decide to become teachers outside and then want to come back. And so any of these kind of ideas that they have Alaska experience and they know what they're getting into is part of what this group of leaders all could see as Alaska grown.
Thank you. And thank you, Barbara. We'll also talk a little bit in detail about develop and keep the workforce. We have a great variation in the amount of turnover amongst our school districts, with our large urban districts averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of 10% annually, and some rural districts it's over 50% teacher turnover. And of course that has a tremendous impact on the quality of education students are receiving when you're having constant turnover. We have many districts that are in the 20 to 30% range annually. So developing and keeping our workforce is critical to improving the quality of education we're able to deliver to our students. We see accomplishing that through professional development largely and some retention. We'll talk more about some of the variables there that we're looking at for that. On page 17 in your report, there's the breakdown for you roughly, and we'll speak to each of these briefly, just touching on high points, and then go to questions that the committee may have or comments. If we look at the first box on the top left, preparation.
What page are we on again, Jerry?
17.
Thank you.
You bet. The first bullet there under preparation is to raise standards for entry and exit into and from educator preparation programs in the state. You will hear from the university presentation the details about that. They are working hard on that, and that's something that was universally agreed to. Barbara mentioned that we gather data from many places. Everyone is in sync with raising the expectations. The next one, increase and strengthen bridge programs to attract minority groups into education careers. We have a tremendous need there. We have a tremendous challenge there. 90% of our teachers are white. 50% of our students aren't. If you go to rural Alaska, 95% of our students are Alaska Native, and about 90% of our teachers are white. The whole understanding of the impact of culture in different parts of the state, the understanding of your students is a great challenge for us, and so we are looking in our preparation programs to address that in a number of ways. Increase capacity, university capacity for educator preparation, and reach the goal of 60%. Currently, it's our understanding that the university does not have the capability or capacity to educate that percentage of our students. That's something we're going to have to work toward. As Barbara mentioned, we're at 36% currently. To get to 60%, we're going to have to up our game, increase our capacity, and we don't know exactly how much more capacity the university has. It's our estimates, we've heard informal estimates from the university that they may be able to increase about 25% using the current resources they have. But that will still not quite get us to where we need to be. But it is a step in the right direction. So again, we're going to have to work in partnership with them. Pre-service field experience. We're not, there's universal agreement, we're not getting our students in preparation to be educators, we're not getting them into the field soon enough. They're not having enough contact time with students, with teachers, in classrooms before they get out of school and are charged with being an educator. And there are several ideas floating around for this. They're good ideas. I think there's a spirit of cooperation in this area, and I expect you'll see some changes there. For the most part, the biggest expense related to increasing pre-service education is transportation and lodging, getting students out into the field and finding places for them to stay, especially in rural areas. That's a big challenge. One of the recommendations in here is to establish laboratory schools. Some of you may be familiar with them in your university experience. You may recall that on campus there were lab schools, and that's something that Alaska does not have. There's strong support for that from across the groups that we've interviewed. Lab schools are places we can try out new methods. We can offer professional development to our current workforce. We can do much to develop the understanding of our educators about the cultural nuances and understandings that they must have to be successful in the field. And the last bullet there is one that we heard over and over again, and it's one that we're seeing the beginnings of right now, and that's cooperation. It's time to work together on this, and sometimes a fiscal crisis is a great tool to bring people together and to cause some cooperation that might not otherwise exist. So that's what we see in that group of recommendations regarding preparation.
And then along with preparation comes recruitment when we're talking about expanding our workforce, 60% Alaska grown. And so the Future Educators of Alaska was a program that was federally funded by Alaska Native Ed monies, and it was very targeted to rural districts. And part of what we heard from people is that if we were able to expand that across all of the schools in the state, we could expand interest in the field by about 2,000 students a year, perhaps. And so depending on what happens with FEA, as long as there's programs like this that are targeted at high school students becoming interested in the field of education, we think that would be a great place, of course, to grow our Alaska-grown workforce. Your well aware that there's a salary and benefits study going on right now being conducted by ICER, and so we heard from the leaders here that there is a need to revisit the salary and benefits package to talk about incentivizing hard-to-fill jobs. And so just keeping being aware of that and recognizing that those are parts of recruitment without necessarily having specific ideas about that until some of this evidence comes out that might support what would be a proper way to go. Alternative certification programs, that's an example just like our bridging programs that we've had some success in the past and we've also had some failures, but recognizing that there are probably some really strong quality people that could do good in the education field if there were alternative certification routes. So we wanted to keep that out there. And then different ideas of loan forgiveness. We recognize that ACPE, the Alaska Post-Secondary Commission on Education, says right now that loan forgiveness, even though they offer some of it, it's not really being taken advantage of. And so there's some of that out there that could be pushed and marketed probably heavier. Maybe providing loan forgiveness for our own students who go outside and want to come back is another incentive of getting our Alaska-grown workforce. So just some ideas around recruitment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. In the professional development in the top right square there, as I said, we started this back in May when we had a different fiscal outlook. It's our understanding that it's roughly cost $4 million a day to operate the system statewide. So this is a big ticket item, and it may be something that's beyond our reach at the moment. However, part of the motivation behind this is that as a state, our school year is shorter than most states. In fact, there's only one state in the nation that has a lower requirement for in-class time than Alaska. So we're at kind of the bottom end already. So it was our initial thought and still our belief that if we could find a way to increase the time that we spend with students and the time we spend on professional development, there would be significant gains. The next one, a statewide voluntary curriculum. What we have currently in Alaska is we have school districts make their own choices about curriculum, and certainly this would not restrict that. But it would offer a way to streamline and perhaps increase the effectiveness of our systems in a number of ways. A voluntary move towards a curriculum that was selected by a group of by the state using input from school districts would offer some significant advantages, including amongst them if it would narrow the range in terms of professional development. As a state, we depend heavily upon nonprofit providers, the Alaska Staff Development Network primarily. In addition, the Department of Ed delivers, also in partnership with them, they deliver professional development. And we have private consultants doing some, and some coming from the university. But it's a shotgun, a scattergun approach, because we have such a diversity of curriculum out there that it makes it very difficult. And also, I should mention, the Alaska Educator Mentor Programs provide much in the way of professional development. But they're spread far and wide because of the diversity of curriculum. If we had a voluntary approach to selecting a curriculum that was used, then it would make professional development much easier. We would have experts in that area. We would develop more competence and more expertise within our workforce, which is relatively mobile, moving from district to district anyway. And so that would offer some advantages there. Additionally, school districts are charged with renewing their curriculum on a six-year cycle, and it's an expensive proposition, as you know, and in many of the smaller districts, it's a tremendous strain on them to have to pull educators out of the classroom to take the time to go through and analyze a whole number of different curriculum options and make a selection. It's also beyond the capacity of school districts to afford this. So what we're proposing here is if we could do this, we could narrow this down and have this paid for by the state what we would really be doing would be getting people on track together, moving forward together to develop our skills of our students and our workforce in a consistent way. The next one that we talk about is one that's currently been looked at for cuts, and that's the Alaska Statewide Mentor Project. It's one of those programs that the data is very clear on. Barbara is much more of an expert on it than I am, and I will let her speak to the data on that.
So studies have been done that, that of course, first looked at increasing teacher retention with our early career teachers, first and second year teachers, and so we are seeing impact in that pretty quick. And then there were some promising results that showed how mentoring of the first and second year teachers was actually carrying over to some impact in student achievement data. So based on that, there was a large grant that the university is pretty close to ending now, which is an investments and innovations grant that they received. And so they're doing a much bigger study now in the urban districts. And so the evidence then about the impact of the mentor project on teacher retention and student achievement should be coming out soon from that five-year project to show how strong that is. But up until this time, there's been very, very promising evidence that it's making a difference and that teachers are staying longer and that it's carrying over to impact in the classroom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That concludes, that's the highlights of our report. We'd be happy to answer any questions if someone has them.
If I could, just one clarification. I might probably drifted when you said it, but you referenced 36%. Is that 36% of the students that start out at UA and a teacher certification course graduate? Is that what you were saying? Yeah. Okay.
No, I think the 36% referenced the number of new hires that come from in-state.
Oh, thanks. Okay. And I guess I have a question on does the university prioritize teacher training as one of the programs that they intend to promote? Is it high on our list? Or
you will be hearing from them, and they will speak to that with much more knowledge than we have, but it's our understanding, based upon what we've observed from the directives of the Board of Regents, that they are placing a very high priority on that.
Yeah, and just to explain, one week from today on Monday, we've asked the Board of Regents to come in and give a priority list of their programs, in full disclosure to the committee, and I was just kind of curious, what you had discovered in that area. Okay, does the committee have any questions? Representative Reinbold?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several questions, so please just let me know. When to stop,
if you would just come to me through me with each question, but you go ahead, sure.
Okay, I noticed, Mr. Covey, that you served as Commissioner of Education.
That's correct.
Under Hickel, and you also served on Alaska Commission of Post-Secondary Education.
Correct.
And I'm now on that.
Oh,
that commission.
Congratulations.
Recent appointment. I also noticed that you're very familiar with the Moore decision,
mm-hmm.
and that you were familiar with a group that brought legal action to the state. So with that knowledge, I want to ask you a few questions. First of all, I believe you stated that you are on contract with the Citizens of Education Advancement of Alaska Children.
That is correct. I'm on contract for this work.
Okay. And is this group engaged in any litigation, do you know, with the state right now?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge. How about the Moore decision? Were they involved with the Moore decision?
Yes, they were.
Okay, so isn't this the same group that's aligned with a lawsuit against the state with the Ketchikan decision?
I can't answer that because I don't truly know what they have done in that regard.
Okay, another question?
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold.
Okay, to my understanding, they are.
Okay.
So, and one of this group, CEAAC star witnesses in the Moore case was Linda Darling-Hammond. She's the senior advisor of Smarter Ballast Assessments Consortium. She's also an advisor to UNESCO and also Alliance for Excellence in Education. Are you familiar with Linda Darling-Hammond?
I am familiar with her, yes.
Okay. So you know that Linda Darling-Hammond believes in regards there's no excellence without equity.
And she also believes that equity is a precondition for excellence. Is this something that you support? It sounds I heard this laced all throughout this presentation about equity.
Oh, I'm not familiar with her positions in that you speak to specifically. I've not read her work, but I am familiar with her. And I could say that this work is based solely upon information we collected from within Alaska. Within the report, you will find documents that we have researched in the process of developing this report, and none of those documents, to my knowledge, have any information from Linda Darling Hammond in them.
Okay, so because the mortgage, I've got it in front of me, and mm-hmm. You know, she was a star witness. You were also testified in that case. So basically, I'm just going to ask you a different angle to the question, but do you agree with Vygotsky or Pezet as a philosopher and doctor in regards to pedagogy and teacher training?
I'm not familiar with their theory.
Neither one? You're not familiar with either one of their theories?
Right.
Correct? Okay. Can I ask another question?
You have another question? Okay.
Okay, so basically, before we talk specifically about the proposal, I want to get an idea of where this falls in the scheme of things. We have the ESOF flexibility document that's determining a lot. I'm sure you've read the ESOF flex waiver. I'm reading it for my second or third time right now. So you're pretty familiar with the flex waiver, is that correct?
I am not.
You're not familiar with it. Okay. Basically, I wanted to ask you in regards to there's a new proposal right now with the ESOF flexibility waiver.
Okay.
So I know Commissioner Hanley is working on that right now, and we're looking at the new conditions for the mm-hmm. for the new ESOF flexibility waiver, but it sounds like you are not familiar with that.
That is correct.
Okay. One last question.
One last
Mr.
question.
Mr. Chairman. So you know the state's broken in regards to funding right now, our fiscal climate. We just don't have money. I heard you in your presentation asking for money. So the school districts are broke. Many of them are saying that this whole Common Core thing is in the assessments online and the broadband and everything is just really costing them a tremendous amount of money. So where do you expect this money to come from when we're like $3 to $5 billion, well, depending on what you look, but let's go a $3 billion shortage right now. Where do you expect this money to come from?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Ryan Bowles, for your question and your comments. As I stated at the beginning, when we began to develop this, the state had a different fiscal future in vision. Since that time, things have changed, and as I also referenced in my comments, some of these recommendations are high price, high ticket items, and they are likely beyond the capability of the state of our system to respond to at the present time. However, that does not negate their importance, and we actually debated, should we take these items out of the report because we can't afford them? And we decided that even though perhaps we can't afford them, they are important points, and so we left them in the report. So we fully acknowledge and understand the fiscal situation of the state right now. Some of these things are not high-ticket items. Some of these things are cooperation and collaboration items, and relatively low cost. So we do feel that there's room within this report to make some progress in this area. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. A follow-up on that, and I appreciate your approach. Number 10 talks about alternative certification opportunities. Do you see that as a cost savings or expensive?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I don't have numbers in my head, but I don't know if a lot of alternative certification programs are actually cheaper or not.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot on that, but I was just pointing it out because I see that as You made a reference there, Jerry, to the fact that crisis creates opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and that may be an opportunity. So if you have more information on that, you didn't emphasize it today. I would like to get more. Thanks. And I'll distribute it to the committee as it comes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In addition to what Barbara shared with you, we know that we have some through alternative certification. We have some alternatives available currently, type M, I believe. We do have people in our communities that are currently working under those types of certificates, and we hope to increase the efforts to identify and recognize and incorporate them into our systems. Additionally, we know that when we bring people in who are local people into our workforce, they stay, and the impact of hiring someone local and having them in their job for 20 years is truly impactful on the community in terms of strengthening the resource base, but it also has a positive impact on the school district because they don't have to recruit. They don't have that constant turnover. And we have a long-standing, long-term relationships with students that is built upon that. So this is an opportunity area. Again, we can't be specific about the cost, but in the long run, we think it's of great benefit.
Yeah. Thanks. Representative Vasquez, for the committee's reference, you see the clock ticking away there. It's an hour off, but I'd like to save at least 20 minutes. We have Ty Nace from Superintendent of Mason Penn, who's going to talk about innovative teacher training and recruitment programs in the district, his district, and it's kind of a good follow-through. So, you know, if you would, keep your questions compact and efficient. Representative Vasquez.
Usually do. Mr. Chair. Mr. Covey, Ms. Adams, thank you for this thorough study. And I especially like the table on pages 29 and 30 where you identify, where you have a recommendation, the agency that would be involved in implementing that recommendation, the time frame, and implementation issues. What I would like to see in light of, and I realize that the fiscal situation of the state was different now than what it was when you started this study, but what I'd like to see is a streamlined version of identifying low-cost items, the approximate cost of the items, and what exactly is the call to duty as far as the call to action on the part of the legislature. What is it that you would want us to do with regard to these low-cost items? And then you could do another list with mid-cost, you know, not too costly, but not low cost in between. So that would be very useful. And what precisely, you know, you want us to do?
Thank you.
I think the goals of the study are very worthy, and a lot of us are aware of these issues. We've been around for a while, so a lot of these issues are not new to us. It's just how do we take the bull by the horns, if you will, and deal with these issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions at this time, I thank you for taking time to present this to us.
Thank you.
Okay. Superintendent Mace. Now we're going to hear how it really gets done. Where the rubber hits the road.
Thank you.
We have a handout, or several handouts here from Lake and Penn. If you would identify yourself for the record, and see as though we have two male speakers, if you would. Every time you speak, identify yourself. It makes the recording a lot easier.
Okay. It's not, yeah. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Take a quick at ease and ensure that everyone has...
weren't quite distributed yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So go ahead and proceed and identify yourself.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. For the record, my name is Ty Mays with the Lake and Penn School District, and with me I have Bill Hill with the Bristol Bay School District. We're here today to share some innovation that we've been working on out in Southwest Alaska. Mr. Hill, I've asked him to be here today. We work closely together. We share curriculum camps. We share professional development and in-services. We share a career and technical education program with a short-term residential piece to that. We share a federal programs director, student activities, student travel. We share staffing. We share grants. We share instructional leadership. We also share facilities. So we're working very closely together. Our two districts, our two boards, realize that our survival depends on each other. We're two small school districts in Southwest Alaska, so we're working closely together, and I'd like to thank Mr. Hill for being here. So one of the innovations that we've been working on, and we wanted to just share with you today, it's something we stumbled into years ago when we had AYP funds, and one of my principals didn't want to spend them. His comment was he didn't need more curriculum, he didn't need more resources. What he needed was an extra set of hands. He needed help in the classroom. We had identified kids for intervention, and we just didn't have the time in the day to address those concerns. So what we did is we hired a young gentleman out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a math teacher who was delivering pizzas. He actually had an engineering degree to boot, and he was unemployed, and we brought him up. And we brought him in January, and he worked through the end of the semester with a very low-performing school. The results were spectacular. And ever since then, I think that was 6 or 7 years ago, we've been increasing our tutor load. We run about 9 tutors now. There's a couple components to this, and I think to really get an idea, we put together a short video just so you can kind of see what we're talking about, and we can go through these two components. But,
Janet, maybe you can kill the front lights. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Can't see the.
Okay, let me.
A little bit of technical difficulty?
Yes, I call IT.
I apologize for this.
You don't have to apologize for those gremlins in the wire. We're used to it. We know it's probably not your fault.
So to speak briefly on this before the video plays, we've been running 9 on-site tutors for the past 3 or 4 years. We put them in our low-performing schools. We refer to them as an educational SWAT team that goes into our school districts. And basically, they drill down on those students that we've identified through Ames Web and other diagnostic assessments that need help. This is funded through a federal A&E grant. And when we wrote the grant, we were thinking about sustainability and how long we can keep these tutors going. So we also developed an online tutoring component, which is much cheaper, but what we found is much more labor intensive as well. It takes a lot of work. All of this is done through university collaboration. We work with, as you'll see in the video when we get it up, we work with Western Oregon, Kutztown, Pennsylvania, Kutztown University of Pennsylvania. We work with University of Alaska Fairbanks, University of Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska. So we're developing these partnerships with these universities to not only bring tutors out, but to also offer online tutoring to our kids. And here we go.
Good.
Yeah, I'll restart it real quick.
The Lincoln Peninsula Borough is comprised of 13 remote rural schools in southwestern Alaska. As an innovative solution for retaining teachers and increasing student achievement, our district develops a highly effective tutoring initiative. Through Foster University partnerships, LPSB students are receiving individualized tutoring to improve specific skills identified through both formative and diagnostic Ames Web assessments. This tutoring program consists of both online and on-site tutoring interventions, which work hand-in-hand to enhance our students' learning experiences. Online tutors are currently enrolled in a teaching program, while the on-site tutors are recent enthusiastic graduates with teaching degrees. Both provide opportunities to interact with energetic role models from outside their rural settings.
The students are in the beginning and how reluctant they are to work with anybody, and then seeing them become much more comfortable with them throughout the process.
They're lacking the camera and have their teeth smile. And then they talk to the side of the pond, like the pond is on. Let me hear you think.
No, this sounds good.
Like that, I can write on it, I used to do math with them, so like I could see where they have the money to do it. And I like that, like, have mentors watch us so that I get their feedback while I'm tutoring for my students.
Then we're going to worry it because what you read the first time, you might have more do you think you tell the second time. Then I want you to use those problem eyes, and I want you to visualize in your brain what it would be like when you're reading. Then we're going to do some summarizing, and we might talk back to the text and comments. So I want you to circle which strategy using a highlighter.
You have to tailor your lessons to their interests, and we've seen that a lot. You're learning about the kid just so that you can make lessons that they really want to enjoy. So.
The second component of this program involves placing tutors within many of our classrooms. The majority of our on-site tutors are recruited in the fall and come to us during the spring semester. The district provides travel and orientation, shopping support, no-cost housing, and an experience of a lifetime.
They are equal, they're equivalent fractions, but think of it in the sense of if I give Karina one giant cookie, and Ian, I gave you a cookie this size. And
here has cookie.
Go ahead. Limit it. Would this half be equal to this half?
As a testimony to the impact on teacher retention, some of our tutors stay on to become permanent teachers, like Christian Mineski, who was our first hire tutor of 2008 and is still with us today. Currently, one-third of our teaching staff was recruited through this tutoring initiative. Our online and on-site tutoring have proven effective in raising student achievement and increased graduation rates, as well as taking a step forward in solving the issue of high teacher turnover in our schools. This model effectively meets the unique needs of rural Alaskan classrooms, and the Lincoln Peninsula School District is proud to be at the forefront of enhancing the learning experiences of our students.
If I could, Mr. Chair, just explaining a little bit about the program and some of the benefits that we found. Our on-site program that we started with, the tutors are recruited. We go out in October, and we do our recruiting in the fall. Most are December graduates, knowing that they're probably going to have to sub for a semester before they can find employment. So what we're offering them with free travel, free housing, $20 an hour, it's really kind of an experience of a lifetime for a lot of these young adults. Like the video said, we have about one-third of our current teaching staff that's actually employed through this program now. So they come, and what we found is that they stay. And a little bit more of what we learned, Mr. Hill.
Mr. Chair, Bill Hill, Bristol Bay School District. Some of the things we've learned is that academic achievement has increased significantly, as you saw with the graphs, that in Lake and Penn School District especially. There's a really important aspect to this where the new staff become immersed in the culture of the district, and it's really important way of building a district culture that's positive and there for the students. The tutors are better prepared for life in rural Alaska. They get to see what life is really like at the sites. They get a good idea of what's going to happen when they're there. They don't end up there after a 30-minute conversation with the superintendent on the ground and get to see their new home site after flying several thousand miles from their home base. Staff retention has increased dramatically, and many of the tutors want to stay after this experience, and so it really decreases the cost of recruiting and the difficulties of finding good replacements for teachers?
Currently in Lake and Penn, we have one opening. We've filled all of our current openings that we've had with our tutors. We brought in a nice crop this year. They're excited. They're enthusiastic to stay. And like Bill said, it's been a three-month-long interview process. They've got to look at us. We've got to look at them. So the online piece, we're doing 54 students this year in Lake and Peninsula. Bristol Bay is doing 10 down the road in Bristol Bay. And as you can see, it's a one-on-one online intervention. They're identified for intervention or sometimes for an enhancement. These aren't just struggling kids. Sometimes they're kids taking a pre-calc course that are above their teacher in Bush, Alaska. They're tutored in 30-minute sessions, 1 to 3 times a week. University students are enrolled in a teacher education program. It looks different with each of our universities. Some are graduate students. Some volunteer. Some universities put this as part of some of their methods courses. We use Blackboard Collaborate and utilize that for the delivery, which is similar to what the UA system uses. And university professors train the tutors to analyze and interpret the Ames Web data and create effective lessons. So they have a nice support structure behind them.
Bill Hill. Once again, with the online tutoring piece, we find that academic achievement has once again increased, and for students at Bristol Bay, teachers identify very specific skills that they would like worked on, something that they can't get to with their whole class load. So we see improvement there. It provides a live learning lab for university students who may not be in contact with students until many years into their university programs. It also adds some ancillary benefits we hadn't expected. There's sort of a big brother, big sister quality to some of these relationships, and it adds another asset to a young Bush child's life that they may not have in their community. Our online tutors often start considering working in Bush, Alaska, and that's a really important outreach effect of this. This works great for our advanced students as well. There's a lot of times where we can't provide those things that many of us as parents would like to have our students to have in Bush, Alaska. It's just difficult to do. And it brings a new energy into our schools. It's nice to have another face. If you're in a small district school of two teachers and you see those same two teachers for 2 or 3 years in a row, having a new face in school, even if it's by an electronic means, is really important.
And it's exciting. What we're starting to find is some of these university students are spending their junior and senior years tutoring for us online through their universities, through our partnerships with universities. And then they're coming up as on-site tutors, and then we're hiring them and putting them into the classroom. So it's actually a 3-year relationship prior to them going into the classroom. So to close, we're excited to be here today, excited to share this. We're working with UA system. We're working with K-12 outreach. We're working with the Department of Education. We hope to grow and replicate the program. We feel that it's very beneficial to Bush, Alaska, and some of the challenges we face out there. There's a cost to this. The on-site tutors cost about $10,000 a piece when you factor in the travel, the induction, and the salary that we have to pay them. But when we take 9 on-site tutors and we add that up, we can do it for about the same cost as 1 certified benefited educator. So that's, in our book, that's a lot of bang for our buck to bring that into our district for the recruitment needs. The online piece, Blackboard Collaborate, costs a little bit of money, and we have a 0.5 FTE that oversees the program for quality control. It's a little bit cheaper, but it is much more labor intensive just to make that all work. So we're excited about the program, and we hope to share it.
That's exciting, and thanks for your innovation. That's great. Any questions, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the online site, is that compensated tutoring or is that volunteers?
Through the chair. Some universities have it actually, it's based on credit. The students, it's a piece of their methodology course or whatever course they're taking. In Kutztown University, back in Pennsylvania, where we have the reality TV benefits, were pretty exciting, and the kids actually volunteer to do the tutoring. They actually have to apply and interview and be accepted to the program to volunteer to tutor, and they turn kids away every year So it just really depends on the university. The University of Alaska is looking at trying to embed it into some of their courses currently.
Fun. Follow up or is it? Question?
So on the online portion and the cost to your district is the halftime FTE for the maintaining the technology, but the actual tutors are basically volunteering to interact with the students. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Sounds like a really well-enhanced student teaching program. Thinking back when I went through student teaching, this would have been great. Question there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you for your presentation. How many students are in the Lake and Peninsula School District?
Through the chair, we currently have enrolled to date about 310 students, and that's spread across 13 school sites. So we're very small, and that's why this works very well for us. It's that fresh phase.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Bristol Bay has 115 in enrollment.
That's correct.
Follow-up, Representative Vasquez? Yeah.
How many full-time teachers and certified teachers in each of the school districts?
Through the chair, I haven't looked at the numbers currently. I know we run about 55 to 60 certified staff, but a lot of that is support staff and itinerants.
Okay.
Most of our school sites, I think eight out of our 13 school sites are two teacher sites. We'll have an elementary generalist and a secondary generalist. And then we have several larger sites, but for the most part, we're running probably 50, maybe certified staff in classrooms.
50 in your school district?
Yes.
Through the chair, Representative Vasquez, we have 12 certified staff, with one of them being a special ed instructor.
Knows Bill. Well, thank you again. And encouraging that, again, your innovation, your creativity, and appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
With that, we're going to adjourn. We'll be back on Wednesday, and